he snuck back into Tegucigalpa in September. Even with this deal, he remains holed up in the Brazilian embassy. The agreement calls for Zelaya to finish out his term in office, which ends in January, if the Honduran Congress votes to reinstate him. Just a few days ago, talks between Zelaya and Micheletti had completely broken down. This announcement comes after a high-level delegation from the U.S. State Department arrived in Tegucigalpa this week to urge both sides back to the table. Jason Beaubien, NPR News, Mexico City.
In Pakistan, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was peppered with pointed questions and comments today about U.S. Predator drone attacks against militants in a series of public meetings. Clinton refused to discuss the matter, saying only that, in her words, there's a war going on. I'm Craig Windham, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Carnegie Corporation of New York, a foundation created to do what Andrew Carnegie called real and permanent good, celebrating 100 years of philanthropy.
Hi, I'm Kevin Kelly. William Mersch and Ricardo Flores constitute the percussion division at the University of Illinois School of Music. On Saturday, Professor Flores leads the UI Steel Band in concert, and on Sunday, Professor Mersch leads the UI Percussion Ensemble, both at the Krannert Center in Urbana. Bill and Ricardo will be my guests on Friday's edition of Live and Local, your connection to local music and more, weekdays from noon to 1 on FM 90.9.
Support for WILL comes from the Wesley Evening Food Pantry, providing groceries, health, education, and human services for area residents during the evening of the third Thursday of every month. Wesley Evening Food Pantry is a member of Community Shares of Illinois, a choice for payroll donation at work. On the web at cs-il.org.
Good morning. This is Focus 580. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Our producers for this program, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Jason Croft, is at the controls this morning. It's estimated that dementia affects about 25 million people in the world today. That number is expected to double by 2020 and double again by 2040. Now, in part, this is due to demographics, to the graying of the world's population. But also, says our guest for this hour, Dr. Scott Mendelson, it's the result of unhealthy changes in our modern lifestyles. This morning, in this hour of the show, we'll be talking about the causes and prevention of dementia. That is the subject of Dr. Mendelson's book, Beyond Alzheimer's. The subtitle is How to Avoid the Modern Epidemic of Dementia. And M. Evans is the publisher on this book. A little bit more about our guest. Dr. Mendelson is currently a consult liaison psychiatrist at the Roseburg VA Medical Center in Roseburg, Oregon. He's a graduate of the University of Illinois College of Medicine. After that, he went on to do his residency in psychiatry at University of Virginia Health Sciences Center in Charlottesville, and has gotten a lot of attention for some of the work that he has done looking at links between metabolic disorders, things like diabetes or obesity, and psychiatric illness. Questions are certainly welcome as we talk with our guest. 333-9455 is the number to call if you are here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are. So if it's a local call, use that number. But we do also have a toll-free line, and that means that if it would be a long-distance call for you, use that number, and we'll pay for the call. That's 800-222-9455. Again, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Questions certainly welcome. We just ask people to be brief so we can keep moving, but questions are welcome. And Dr. Mendelson, hello.
Yes, good morning.
Thanks very much for talking with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here.
We certainly, the problem of Alzheimer's disease is something that has gotten a lot of attention in the media, for and I'm sure for good reason, and something I expect in the weeks to come people will be hearing more and more about as November is National Alzheimer's Awareness Month. Just as a way of starting out, though, I wonder if, do you think that by putting so much emphasis on Alzheimer's disease, that we somehow have missed something more important in a larger sense about the varieties of dementia that we see?
Well, you're exactly right. I think that's a very important point to make. Part of the basis for my title, Beyond Alzheimer's, for my book, is the fact that there's a misconception that's quite common in the public, and that is that Alzheimer's and dementia are somehow interchangeable or one and the same thing, and that's just really not the case. Alzheimer's dementia is just a subtype of dementia. It's one type that can be developed, and it accounts for about 45% of dementia cases in the United States. So there are a number of other important varieties. There's vascular dementia, which is the next most common type, which can occur with strokes, of course, but also because of high blood pressure and various vascular problems. There's also a form called Lewy body dementia, and there is frontotemporal dementia. So Alzheimer's is just one of several types that can occur.
Yeah. I cited some statistics that you give here in the introduction to the book about the incidence of dementia and the projections that the numbers will grow. And you go on to comment on the fact that, well, yes, indeed, partly that can be explained by simple demographics. That is, if the percentage of the population that's in those older age ranges grows, then we shouldn't be surprised that we would see an increase in dementia. But then you go on to say, well, you know, this is really not just simply about demographics, that it really does have to do with the way that we live. And then, as we'll discuss, I'm sure that you then go on to say, and that those are things that can, there are a lot of things there that can be modified.
Well, that's exactly right. Some of the misconceptions about Alzheimer's and other dementia lies in the fact that people think that you can be destined or essentially doomed to develop the disease. But in fact, there's essentially two different types of Alzheimer's. The type that was first seen and described by Dr. Alois Alzheimer back in 1906 occurred in a woman. This unfortunate woman's name was Auguste Detter, and she was brought to his office when she was only 51 years old, and she was extremely ill at the time, and her illness evolved rapidly, and she died at the age of 55. Now, in fact, this type of Alzheimer's disease, which is called early onset or familial Alzheimer's disease in reference to the fact that there's strong genetic links, this occurs in only about 5% of cases. Now, for the most part, genes are neither necessary nor sufficient to produce Alzheimer's disease. This other type of Alzheimer's is referred to as late onset or sporadic Alzheimer's. Now, this isn't to say that genes don't play a role, and certainly some people are predisposed to Alzheimer's because of genes. But as I said a moment ago, genes are neither necessary nor sufficient for the illness. It's really far more involved in terms of lifestyle choices, diet, stress, and how you live your life.
And you would, I'm guessing now that you would say that you can make the statement that, broadly speaking, dementia, not just Alzheimer's type of dementia, but these other sorts of dementias, follow a similar path. That is that it's much more about lifestyle, environmental factors. Not, again, you would say it's not that genetics don't play any role at all, but that that's not the, in most cases, that's not the primary thing that's going on.
Well, yes, I think that's fair to say. All of the different types of dementia seem to have a similarity to Alzheimer's in that there are early forms of the illness that can develop in adults in their 40s and 50s. And these tend to be strongly driven by genetics. Mm-hmm. But these are the minority of cases. In most cases, these develop as people are older than that, in their 60s and 70s. And they are very much due to various illnesses that arise from lifestyle choices and poor diet. There's a number of predisposing illnesses. It's known that heart disease and diabetes and obesity Psychiatric illnesses like major depression, even PTSD, can predispose people to dementia of various types. So it's not at all dependent on genetics, as many people think, but very much in terms of how you live your life.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's, I think that that's, if there's anything here that is encouraging, it is that by making lifestyle modifications, you can reduce your risk of developing some kind of dementia, and that when you're talking about what it is you're suggesting people to do, that in fact, it's very much in keeping with the kind of advice that we give people to try to lower their risk of heart disease and stroke and diabetes, all things that are we're very concerned about the levels of those things in this country. So generally, the general kinds of advice on what constitutes a healthy lifestyle, we're talking about all the same stuff, essentially.
Well, that's I think that's quite fair to say. Some of the predisposing factors, as I mentioned, to dementia are heart disease and diabetes. These are two of the biggest culprits. And one of the factors that tends to lead to those illnesses is something called the metabolic syndrome. This was the subject of my first book about metabolic syndrome and psychiatric illness. This is a syndrome of high blood pressure, high cholesterol, high blood sugar, what's called abdominal obesity, that pot belly that people tend to get. And this is a condition that's very much due to poor diet, particularly a lot of sweets, a lot of saturated fat. It's exacerbated by a lack of exercise. It's increased by stress. It's aggravated by not enough sleep, and the metabolic syndrome is becoming virtually epidemic in our society today. About 60% of people over the age of 55 can be considered to be at risk of metabolic syndrome. And this is a condition that to some degree is influenced by genetics, but it's largely a matter of diet, exercise, and lifestyle.
Well, we can certainly, I mean, we know that in this country that heart disease is a serious problem and that that these mechanisms, they lead us towards heart attacks and they lead us towards strokes. And that we also know that particularly as the average weight of the population goes up, we're starting to see more and more. And in younger groups, we're seeing problems with diabetes and there are then a number of other associated problems that go with uncontrolled diabetes. So in and of themselves, all of those things, there's good reasons to see what we can do to minimize heart disease, stroke, and diabetes. The thing that I think is interesting, and I suppose some people would say, well, that's a new idea, is the connection between all of that and psychiatric illness.
Yes, psychiatric illness, and that could certainly include dementia. The interesting thing to do is to go the next step in terms of what causes dementia and other brain conditions. I mentioned, of course, heart disease and diabetes and obesity. But the mechanisms involved in terms of how this damages brain tissue are also known. For example, in heart disease and high blood pressure, the arteries and fine blood vessels of the brain can be damaged and blood flow is compromised. And this can cause a lack of sufficient oxygen. And this, in turn, can cause what's called oxidative stress. There are also conditions where there's too much sugar in the blood. This can cause changes in proteins, and this can cause inflammation. And inflammation further damages brain tissue. There are also substances released from fat tissue in the gut, this pot belly that I mentioned before. These substances are called cytokines, and they can also influence inflammation and various forms of stress inside the brain tissue. So there are a lot of conditions that can aggravate the way that tissue is being affected in Alzheimer's and the other dementias. Now, something that I want to add, I mentioned that there are types of dementia, but in most cases, you actually get a mixed dementia. It's more the exception rather than the rule to see pure cases of Alzheimer's or Lewy body or vascular. In most people in their 60s and 70s, they have a mixed picture where there's a lot of different influences that arise from a lot of different types of damage that has accumulated in the brain and in the body. And again, all of these are due to lifestyle choices.
Let me introduce again the guest for this hour of Focus 580, Dr. Scott Mendelson. He's currently a consult liaison psychiatrist at the Roseburg VA Medical Center in Roseburg, Oregon. He's a graduate of the U of I, went to med school here, graduated in 96, then completed his residency in psychiatry at University of Virginia Health Sciences Center in Charlottesville. And he is the author of a book that we're talking about here this morning, and the title of his book is Beyond Alzheimer's, How to Avoid the Modern Epidemic of Dementia. It is published by the publisher M. Evans, and I'm sure that you can find the book out there if you'd like to read it. And indeed, it's all about what is dementia, how is it diagnosed, those things that we've been talking about here that contribute to the increased risk, and then kind of things that people can do, lifestyle changes that can prevent or at least make it less serious, less severe dementia. So questions are certainly welcome, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. And we do have a caller here in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Please tell me, as I'm sitting here looking at my paunch and thinking to myself, oh my God, I'm in trouble now. If any of these lifestyle effects and or physiological effects of some sort, if they're reversible, or once the damage is it done and that's it, and so on and so forth. Address the if one can change their, you know, if one loses weight and behaves and so on and so forth, that will markedly improve one's chances of avoiding Alzheimer's. My father had dementia, and I've watched several old friends just wither away into nothing mentally, and that scared the bejesus out of me. So address that if you would, please.
Okay.
Yeah, certainly. I understand your concern. First of all, I want to address something that you mentioned. You said that you watched your father deteriorate with his illness. Sometimes people come to me and with concern, saying that their mother or father had Alzheimer's, and they're concerned about themselves. And then when I asked how old their parent was when they developed the illness, sometimes they'll say, oh, they were 80 or 85, and then I tell them that when it developed that late in life, that they themselves probably have no more risk than anyone else to develop the illness. So that can be of some comfort. But the point that you made is a very good one. There is certainly evidence that you can improve your overall condition and reverse some of the damage being done by improving your diet, and that primarily means reducing saturated fats, reducing a lot of the simple carbohydrates, the sugars, and easily digested starches, the so-called high glycemic index foods. You can lose weight, and you can get exercise, improve your sleep, and all of these things will begin to improve the likelihood that you can avoid dementia. There are even studies in individuals that have already been diagnosed with Alzheimer's that show that exercise and of the physical kind as well as mental exercises can improve behavior and cognitive function. And it's certainly the case in younger people that this can be done. Something important to point out is that the changes in the brain that eventually evolve into a dementia, primarily the deposition of what's called amyloid protein and what are called neurofibrillary tangles of another protein called tau, these changes can be seen about 15 years before any cognitive deficits are noted. So it's best to start early in one's 40s and 50s to reverse poor lifestyle choices and to prevent further degeneration. But it's never too late to improve.
Other questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll-free 800-222-9455. Real quick, before I go on to some other callers, let me pick up on a point. And I think that in talking about things that people can do to maintain their mental health, people have reached for the exercise metaphor, and they have said something like, well, you know, if you don't use your muscles, if you don't get exercise, your muscles will atrophy. And they say the same thing kind of applies to the brain. That is, if you don't use it, it will atrophy, and they say that doing things and whatever it is that you like to do to maintain your mental functioning, so whether that's doing crosswords or Sudoku or, you know, something that is mentally challenging, that will reduce your risk of developing dementia. And then I think that then also some people have said, well, that doesn't really make a whole lot of difference. So it sounds like you're coming down on the side that says, well, yes, actually, doing things that exercise your mental muscle, so to speak, are good.
Well, yes, it's definitely good, and there's a lot of research to show that it's good. And it's good in several different aspects. For one thing, type of research has shown that a good education can help prevent a dementia, and that the more years spent in higher education decrease the risk of dementia. And this is even seen in studies of identical twins, where one twin pursued higher education and the other didn't. It's also known that mentally challenging jobs help prevent dementia in later years. Now, what I point out to people is you don't have to be a rocket scientist or a physicist to be seen as having a mentally challenging job. Teachers, engineers, carpenters, they all have challenges in the work they do, whether it's social decisions or various judgments and so forth. But to challenge yourself and to remain active intellectually in your job is very important. Now, in terms of exercises such as crossword puzzles and so forth, I tend to see these in a way similar to vitamins supplements. They're good for you. It's a way to make certain that you exercise your brain in your mind every day. But what I would suggest, and again in the same analogy that good food is probably the best way to get nutrients rather than a supplement, that I think doing interesting things with interesting people in the real world is probably preferable to depending on crossword puzzles and so forth. But on the other hand, I think it's great, especially if people enjoy them, to stimulate your brain once a day with a Sudoku puzzle or crossword. I think that's great. There's certainly evidence that stimulating your brain and being in an interesting environment helps nerve growth. The neurons will actually increase the dendrites, the little root-like structures that they send out to other neurons when they're being challenged and used. And the analogy that you first mentioned, similar to using your muscles, is very true, and it can be seen under the microscope where if you use your brain and use parts of your mind, that your neurons will actually grow and maintain their growth and maintain their health. The other interesting aspect is that people that have used their brains throughout their lives, even when they do develop signs of dementia, even when later studies of their brain tissue show that they did have these amyloid plaques and tangles of abnormal tau protein, even in the same degree that strongly affected individuals had, that their brains still worked better. It's almost as if they had a spare tire that they carried around with them, that they were able to use their brains better even though they had significant damage. So there's a lot of good reasons to maintain your brain activity.
Okay, let's talk with some other callers. Piatt County is the next in line, line four. Hello.
Oh, hello.
Yes.
My father was diagnosed at 72 with Alzheimer's and died then 3 years later. And then I myself am a cancer survivor and because I was called aggressive treatment. And so I was wondering if there's anything in your book about, you were talking about things that you can control in your lifestyle, but is there anything about the effects of chemotherapy? Because there's something that we call chemo brain. And, a certain time after your chemo, you can be confused and have different effects. And so I always wonder, how long can I blame chemo brain for effects? I mean, is there any research out there about the effects of chemotherapy on Alzheimer's?
That's an extremely good question. To answer your final question, I'm not aware of any specific studies on the effects of chemotherapy on the development of Alzheimer's. I am also only aware of anecdotal studies about the effect of chemotherapy on cognition. I do know that chemotherapy can have kind of a dulling effect on cognitive function. I've seen it firsthand in a number of people. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, there's a lot of different kinds of chemotherapeutic agents used in the treatment of cancer, so there's no one effect on the brain, but there's certainly basis to think that it can affect the way people think, and it certainly does. I think that the same rules still apply, though, that if you begin to alter your diet, the diet that's been proven to reduce the risk of Alzheimer's is the one that's called the Mediterranean diet.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And certainly that would be the one that I would choose for you. If you exercise and get good sleep, stay active socially, intellectually, and physically, these would certainly give you a head start. There are a number of herbs and supplements and vitamins. One thing that you might want to do first, though, and that would be to visit your doctor and make certain that there are no lingering effects on your body, that your thyroid status is good, thyroid hormone, that your vitamin B12 levels are good. I know that some cancer therapies can affect folic acid levels, another extremely important vitamin. And you don't want to overlook these good basic test to find out if there are any problems that remain. So that would certainly be a good step to take. But I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say you've been very helpful and encouraging, and I intend to read your book. So thank you so much.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. Mm-hmm. We're a little bit past the midpoint here. I have some other callers who we'll get to as soon as I introduce again our guest, Dr. Scott Mendelson. He's currently a consult liaison psychiatrist at the Roseburg VA Medical Center in Roseburg, Oregon, where he makes his home. He's a graduate of the U of I College of Medicine. Did his residency in psychiatry at University of Virginia Health Sciences Center in Charlottesville, has done a lot of work on links between metabolic disorders like diabetes and obesity and psychiatric illness, and he is the author of the book Beyond Alzheimer's, How to Avoid the Modern Epidemic of Dementia. That's the subtitle. M. Evans is the publisher. Let's go on here. Talk next to someone in Hidalgo, line 2. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
My wife, she was having a little trouble with her memory, and she broke her hip and had to have surgery about a year ago, and ever since she did that, it's been downhill, and at this time, she can't even walk along with her memory. It's not no good either.
How old is your wife?
She's 77. She's 76 when that happened.
Okay, and, of course I can't diagnose over the phone and so forth, but just some basic considerations. First of all, as I mentioned before, and it's important enough to be repeated, your wife should have a good examination by a good, thorough doctor to see if her vitamin B12 and folic acid levels are good, if her thyroid function is good, find out if she's anemic, see if there are any medical problems, because part of diagnosing an actual dementia is ruling out any medical problems that could be causing the loss of memory. Another important thing to point out is that depression and anxiety can present like dementia. In fact, it's sometimes called pseudo-dementia, when a person says that they can't think and can't concentrate and the memory's not good. Sometimes this can be due to depression. And certainly when a person has broken their hip and they're in pain and they've lost some function, this can certainly cause depression. So I encourage you to go to a good doctor that you trust and have some of these things ruled out, because some of these might be reversible and she might feel a lot better.
Well, we did about all those things that you mentioned, but she just went downhill.
Yeah.
And I've heard that lots of times when they put them out for surgery, that causes some people to have trouble with their memory and such when they're up that age.
Well, you're exactly right. A general anesthesia can cause some deficits in memory sometimes, and it can initiate processes or exacerbate processes that are already going on. I also need to note that pain medications can sometimes dull the mind and cause problems in thinking. So that can be a problem. It's also not uncommon for me to hear, especially in people that are in physical distress, that they will take over-the-counter sleep medicines so that they can get some rest. And some of these medicines are the opposite of what are prescribed for Alzheimer's. So these are things that should be looked at. I agree with you that sometimes people can trace the origin of cognitive problems to major surgeries. And, of course, a hip replacement and the hip fractures, it's quite a severe injury, and it can take a lot out of a person. Is your wife being seen by a good doctor? Has she been started on anything for dementia, if that's the case?
Yeah, we've had a neurologist and doctors and everything else. And she took therapy right after she had this.
Yeah.
And she'd done pretty good for 2 or 3 months. And then from about 3 or 4 months after that, it was downhill. She could walk some, and then by about 8 or 9 months into this, by then she got to where she couldn't walk.
Yeah.
And she's just pretty bad shape right now.
Well, it's a tragic thing to happen and a tragic thing to watch. I just can't emphasize enough that all of the medical and psychiatric aspects need to be thoroughly ruled out, and you might even want to get some second opinions.
Yes.
Also, you can have dementia along with depression and other problems, too. That can certainly happen. But I certainly wish you the best.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks for the call. Let's go on to Savoy, our next caller, line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Is there any evidence to the speculation of several years ago that cosmic radiation has an effect on, as a causative of Alzheimer's?
That's an interesting question. I don't know particularly about cosmic radiation specifically. The Earth is certainly bathed in various forms of radiation from the stars and so forth. I do know, however, that there is a good scientific evidence that exposure to high levels of certain electromagnetic radiation can exacerbate Alzheimer's, and in particular the laying down of amyloid protein and abnormal tau protein in brain tissue. It is known, for example, that individuals who work in the power industry that are around the dynamos that generate electricity, individuals that work around high-tension power lines, these individuals are prone to developing Alzheimer's. There is also some interesting information, and I discuss it in my book as well, that radon gas may be involved in some cases. Now, radon gas is a radioactive gas. It's known to be involved in about 15% of cases of lung cancer in the United States. Radon gas is seen in some parts of the country more than others, and people should check with their local health departments to see if their particular area is high in radon gas levels. But it tends to, it's heavier than air, so it tends to be in basements and in low areas, and it can actually cause some changes in brain tissue that is similar to what's seen in Alzheimer's disease. To extend this discussion even a little bit further, there's even some suggestion that's similar to what's discussed with brain tumors in terms of cell phones. And there's no smoking gun, and some of the concern about brain tumors and cell phones has calmed down a bit, too. But there is animal data showing that amyloid plaque deposition can increase with 6 hours of cell phone exposure in laboratory rats. And there are some studies from Sweden showing that rates of Alzheimer's went up when cell phones became available in the rugged countryside of Sweden and other Scandinavian countries. So this whole notion of radiation, whether it's cosmic or whether it's more of the mundane kind, is a very interesting one, and there's a lot of questions that still need to be answered.
Well, again, I hope that helps with the caller. We have about 10 minutes left to have another caller. And again, I guess I'd just like to real quickly introduce our guest, Dr. Scott Mendelsohn. He is currently working as a consult liaison psychiatrist at the Roseburg VA Medical Center in Roseburg, Oregon, where he lives. And we're talking about some of what you'll find in his book, Beyond Alzheimer's, the subtitle, How to Avoid the Modern Epidemic of Dementia. in which he really makes the argument that a lot of dementia, Alzheimer's disease, and other kinds of dementia really has to do with lifestyle, and that there are changes that you can make that can prevent or at least reduce your risk of developing dementia. Questions welcome, 333-9455 and toll-free, 800-222-9455. I think we have another caller here on our line one. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes. First of all, your guest is fascinating. I'm really, really interested in this topic. I was wondering, and you may have said something because I came in the middle of the program, have you ever talked about the effects of drinking in terms of memory loss? And can you tell me if there is any incidence that has to do with thyroid problems?
Okay, two very interesting questions, and I haven't touched at all upon the alcohol question. It's a very fascinating one, and it's a controversial one as well. The best evidence shows that a little alcohol, and that means about a glass of wine, maybe every day, perhaps every other day, but moderate amounts may actually reduce the risk of developing a dementia. Now, there's some question as to whether it's the alcohol in wine or whether it's some other things in wine. It is known, for example, that red wine may be the most helpful. And red wine contains a number of things from grape skins, such as resveratrol, a very interesting substance. Also, a number of antioxidants and important substances that can help reduce brain damage from various problems in brain tissue. But there's also some evidence that even moderate amounts of beer or moderate amounts of even whiskey can have beneficial effects. The best advice, however, and it's advice that I give myself, particularly at the VA hospital where there's a lot of substance abuse, the advice is this, that if an individual drinks moderately, advise them to continue. If they have substance abuse, advise them to stop. And if they don't drink, don't advise them to start.
But, that sounds like good advice.
Yes. But it's an interesting question, and there is evidence that alcohol can be helpful, particularly red wine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in terms of thyroid, deficiency mimics depression, and it mimics dementia. And it's something that can be easily tested for and easily reversed, and that is one of the things that I strongly advise people to have evaluated. If there's any question about losing memory and concentration and not doing well in terms of cognitive function, it's a tragedy that there are reversible medical conditions that go untreated that could be easily reversed, and people would do much better.
Thank you.
Lauren, thank you. I guess, you've now made that point a couple of times, but I even think that it's worth underscoring for anyone who, if you have a family member, you know, could be a spouse, could be a parent, could be a sibling, or whatever, who seems to be having memory problems, that because, as you say, there are physiological, there are medical problems that can cause that, and that there are things that can end up looking like dementia that aren't. So, I mean, as you said, the very first thing to do is to get, and hopefully people have the access and they can, get a good medical workup so that you really know, so that you can eliminate those other things first.
Absolutely. And what I want to emphasize is that I myself see just astonishingly large numbers of vitamin D deficiencies, B12 and folic acid deficiencies. I see these all the time at the VA hospital. And these can be reversed, and they definitely have adverse effects on brain function.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment. What is it that you recommend in terms of vitamin intake, and does that mean that you would suggest people for certain things might want to supplement more than what you would get in a sort of standard multivitamin mineral supplement?
First of all, a good diet is the most important, and I would suggest what's referred to as a Mediterranean diet with low saturated fat, low simple carbohydrates, a lot of good fibrous vegetables, fish, beans. This can be available in many bookstores and libraries. The Mediterranean diet is described quite often. Beyond that, it's becoming mainstream medicine to see the wisdom in a simple multivitamin, multi-mineral supplement. That's certainly wise. It's cheap. It does absolutely no harm, and it can do a great deal of good. Beyond that, vitamin D is extremely important to supplement. As I mentioned, there's a virtual epidemic in deficiency because we're so conscious of skin cancer that we're covering up and slathering ourselves with sunscreen, and this blocks vitamin D production. So we should all take 400 units of vitamin D. Vitamin C is important, and even the Linus Pauling Institute recommends only 400 milligrams a day now. Linus Pauling was a brilliant man. I had the pleasure of meeting him several times, but he was probably extravagant in the recommendation that he made. But 400 milligrams of vitamin C, there's some evidence that vitamin E in high quantities can actually be dangerous. Now, this did not include studies of natural vitamin E, but to be cautious and prudent, I recommend that people take 200 and certainly no more than 400 units of vitamin E a day. People can be easily tested for vitamin B12, but people that are vegetarians and who probably aren't consuming much B12 should certainly take a vitamin B12 supplement. Folic acid is extremely important, and it works with vitamin B12, and it's often in multivitamins. But B12 is probably more likely to be a problem because vegetarians don't get much at all, and people with stomach problems, including people that take certain acid-neutralizing medications, probably don't absorb much. So I certainly recommend B12 supplementation. Now, chromium is a mineral like sodium and potassium, and it enhances the way insulin works. This has been known for a long time, but even doctors are sometimes unaware of this fact. Chromium's in brewer's yeast, or it's in a form called chromium picolinate. 200 to 400 micrograms a day can really help control your blood sugar, which is so very important. Fish oil is extremely important. Scandinavian studies show that people that eat a lot of fish in their diet have reduced risk not only of heart disease and diabetes, but of developing Alzheimer's dementia. So this is an excellent addition. I tell my patients to keep taking fish oil until they have an overwhelming urge to jump into the Umpqua River, which is a river that runs through Roseburg, Oregon. But it's excellent for you and really improves health. Now, beyond that, there's also a number of different herbs and what are sometimes called nutraceuticals. These need to be taken in a systematic way. There's in my book, I have a bit of a system that describes antioxidant effects, anti-inflammatory effects, nerve growth stimulating effects, anti-metabolic syndrome effects, certain substances that enhance the neurotransmitter acetylcholine, and there are even some herbs that can reduce the buildup of amyloid in the brain. So there's a lot of pretty good information about herbs and supplements. None of them reverse Alzheimer's once it's started. That point needs to be strongly emphasized because no one should be taken advantage of in that fashion to have false hope that they can reverse something that is in progress. But in one's 40s and 50s, when these processes are starting, it's certainly wise to look into some of these supplements.
Mm-hmm. And again, just very quickly, and people can they can look at this, but the other kinds of things that you're advising are very much in keeping with the standard sort of advice that people are given to minimize their risk of heart disease, stroke, and diabetes. So we're talking about cut down on your fat do things like get exercise for your body and mind, try to do what you can to minimize stress, do what you can to get good sleep, and of course, all these things are not easy to do. It's a pretty reasonable package of advice that would probably help you be in a rounded way healthy in a lot of other respects in addition to just this thing that we're talking about, reducing your risk of dementia.
Yes, and I think that's the important link. People may not realize that heart disease, diabetes, and obesity are three of the major risk factors for dementia. Now, another one that I really want to mention before we run out of time is good dental care. This is an extraordinarily important thing. There's a lot of bacteria at the gum line. Many people have gingivitis. The American Heart Association has recognized that the bacteria that can get into the blood system can cause heart disease and can cause inflammation when it gets stuck in plaque in arteries and so forth. And there's growing information that poor dental health can increase the risk of dementia as well. Even losing teeth can affect the brain, and not simply through poor nutrition. It's a fascinating a new set of data, but I wanted to point that out because it's underappreciated.
Huh. So I assume that you're just talking about not, you know, people ought to be good about their home care, following whatever advice their dentists give them, and that one ought to have regular. I'm sure the Dental Association would be out there applauding. They'd say, "Well, you ought to have regular exams and cleanings."
Yes, it's absolutely right, and the benefits are far beyond what you suspected.
All right. Well, at that point, I think we're going to have to finish. I wanted to again say that if people are interested in reading on this subject, that is the relationship of lifestyle to dementia and things that people can do to reduce their risk, you can look at this book that we've talked about. The title of the book is Beyond Alzheimer's, How to Avoid the Modern Epidemic of Dementia. It's published by Evans and by our guest, Dr. Scott Mendelsohn. And Dr. Mendelsohn, thanks very much for talking with us today.
Oh, it's been my great pleasure.
This program, Focus 580, is supported in part by Bodywork Associates, offering professional licensed massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982. Now with four area locations, including inside the new Activities and Recreation Center north of Memorial Stadium on the U of I campus. More information is at bodyworkassociates.com. WILL thanks Jack and Marjorie Richmond for their gift of the Richmond Journalism Teaching Studio adjacent to Campbell Hall for public telecommunication. And I'd just like to mention that if you haven't looked at it ever or recently, you might want to take a look at our website. There's a lot of information there on programming that we have on WILL radio and television, and that is one way that you can get at our web archives. We have a vast collection of past interviews on a wide array of subjects from Focus 580 in the Afternoon Magazine. A lot of our other programming is there. So you can search by the name of the guest if you like. You can search by topic, and that way you can catch up on some programs that you might have missed, or maybe there's something that you'd like to listen to again. It's all at our website, which is WILL, that's W-I-L-L, will.illinois.edu. And that's it for us here on Focus, but we want you to stay tuned. There is much more coming up as part of the Afternoon Magazine. The host, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you very much, David. Today in the 1 o'clock hour of the program, we'll feature the Capital Steps, Their Politics Takes a Holiday Halloween special. That follows the 1 o'clock news this afternoon. Let's take a look now at commodity prices. Prices are lower today. The contracts are all down across the board here, with the exception of feeder cattle. December wheat in Kansas City trading at 5 $5.75, down 7.25. March 5.17, down 7. December wheat in Chicago, 4.92 1/4, down 11.5. March 5.12, down 11.25. December corn, 3.67 1/2, down 12. March 3.81, down 11.5. May 3.89 1/2, down 12. July 3.97 3/4, down 11.75. November soybeans, 9.74 1/4, down 11.25. January 9.72 1/2, down 14.5. March 9.70 1/2, down 17. May 9.65, down 18.75. July 9.67 3/4, down 18.25. December meal, 2.94.80, down 50. December oil, 36.